reading from Art of Chanting. This is the third chapter, chapter of Nama Parad. We're discussing the second offense, which is to equate the demigods with Lord Vishnu. This is something from Vrindavan Das Thakur, Chaitanya Bhagavat. Grihastha Vaishnavas must be convinced that by worshipping only Krishna and the Vaishnavas, all results will be attained. While performing samskaras, such as worshipping the forefathers, which means pitris, pitri puja, pitri paksha, performing pitri paksha, or shrad, worshipping of the ancestors who have left the world and maybe hung up on some other planet, Bhuloka, or even Patal Loka. This is the puja that's done. But if in Satkriya Sardipika, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he is Gaudiya Vaishnavized, all the samskaras, so that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas can maintain their attachment to Krishna and develop their pure bhakti, pure devotion, without any extraneous mixture. So although the samskaras are observed, the minimum samskaras are also observed, like Grihastha Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas. If they follow the edicts of Satkriya Sardipika, then they won't misidentify the demigods as being something extraordinary. For example, if one is performing Shraddh ceremony or Pitri Paksha to worship the ancestors, what happens, although generally it's quite a fairly elaborate ceremony where there's a homa performed, a yajna, and feed so many brahmins and so many pujas and many rituals that have to be observed. But Gopal Bhatta Goswami is saying in Satkriya Saradipika that all you have to do is, first we worship Krishna. Forget about your ancestors, worship Krishna. Because he's the source of all the ancestors. He's the source of everyone. First worship Krishna and offer him wonderful bhoga. Then that Krishna prasad is offered to the various demigods, then to the ancestors. And that's what they do, practically speaking, that's done by the worshippers of Radha and Krishna, especially Brijvasis. They have regard for the devatas, and they respect them, and they also worship them, but they actually have an understanding, for the most part, of their relegated position, of their subordinate position to Krishna. For example, in Nandagaon, they worship Krishna Balaram, Nanda Baba, Sridham, Subal. And after they offer the bhoga to Krishna Balaram, then they offer the remnants to the coward boys, and then they take a plate and they take it out to Nandishwar Shiva. There's a Shiva Linga there on top of the hill, right beside Nanda Bhavan. And per the Leela and per the request of Mahadev, he was humbly asking Mother Yashoda, let me just stay here. And of course she wanted him to stay there and help Krishna stop crying. Because one day Krishna was crying like anything because he couldn't have darshan of Shiva because he was denied by Yashoda. And she couldn't figure out any way to stop him from crying. So then they went and found Shiva, brought him back, granted him darshan, and immediately Krishna stopped. As soon as Lala's lotus feet were placed on Mahadev's head, then Mahadev smiling from ear to ear, and Krishna stopped crying. He became very happy. Mother Yashoda said, "Oh, Mahadev, you're like magic. You're like magic." As soon as my boy touched his head on your feet, he stopped crying. This is a magic anti-crying pill. Like people have sleeping pills that they can't sleep. or they so they take a sleeping pill. Mother Yashoda was saying, "You're magic because my boy just touched his feet to your head and immediately stopped crying. He's been bawling for hours, and so this is so. Why don't you, can you stay here? Can you stay near my house? And whenever Lala starts crying, he can come put his feet on your head, and that magic anti-crying pill will." And he said, "Yes, that would be my greatest pleasure. I would love to stay here." So then he took up residence there beside the palace. And he said, I have some conditions. If you want me to serve your motherhood and to assist you in your child raising with Krishna to stop his crying, then I have to be paid. I want some payment. I want some salary. And what? Oh, then Mother Yashoda Maya said, "Okay, Mahadev, what do I have to pay you?" He said, every morning you're bathing your Lala, and so that Charanamrita, you please pour it on my head. This Gopal Charanamrita. And then that will be sufficient. And then, after you feed your Lala, you offer him Bhoga, then you please give the remnants to me. So this is going, so here we have a Nandagaon, an example of how primary emphasis is given to Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Then his remnants are given to the Devas. Like Lord Shiva, who is one of the primal demigods, Shiva and Brahma and Durga. So this is a system. So in this second offense to the holy name, to equate the demigods with Lord Vishnu, or to give them some special position, even sometimes beyond Vishnu, is an offense. And Namdas Thakur is pointing out that Grihastha Vaishnavas should be very careful about this second offense to the holy name. Because because they're the ones that are involved with samskaras. Brahmacharis don't do garbhadan samskara. At least I hope not. And brahmacharis don't do namkarana and chudakarana and all the various samskaras that are basically related to a baby. Because this baby has to purify this jiva that's coming into the womb with the wife, the religious husband and wife, and then he'll grow up. He or she has to observe various samskaras, purificatory rites, to prepare his consciousness to understand God. So therefore, most of these samskaras, except for Namkarana, a Brahmacharya will also have Namkarana, he'll get a name. And that's one samskara. And then the last one is Antyatma, and then he'll have Vidyakarana, educational samskara, where chalk is put in his hand and he's taught the first Akshara syllable A to write. That's the beginning. That's called Vidyarambha, the beginning of his education. And then the last, he'll have that one. That's the second one, Vidya Sanskara. Then the third one he'll have is, I think it's called Antyasti or Antyasti. Means when they burn you up. And everybody gets to get in the fire one time or another. If you're not in the fire of Krishna consciousness now, then you can get into it at the end when they roast up your body on the fire, on the wood, on the banks of the Jamuna. Then everybody will look and say, "Well, he was a pretty laid-back devotee, but he looks pretty fired up now." He really looks like he's fired up in Krishna consciousness. He was pretty much mixing sense gratification his whole life, but at the end he went out with a blast. He went out with a flaming end. So generally we would try to think that it would be better to get fired up in Krishna consciousness before the last moment, or even moment to moment. So these are the three minimal samskaras that even a brahmachari would observe. But the grihasthas will observe all 10 as dasavita samskara. And oftentimes they put so much emphasis on the demigods and these vivaha jagya, these marriage samskaras and Ganesh puja and Digpal puja, and they lose, and sometimes even many grihasthas get into the groove or get into the idea of thinking that demigods are even superior or supreme because they're supplying our orders and giving us what we want. So this second offense of equating demigods with Lord Vishnu, this especially attention is being pointed out to the grihasthas that they must be convinced that by worshipping Krishna only and the Vaishnavas, all results will be attained. Knowledge, you'll pass your examinations, you'll be promoted to the next class, you'll get a good husband, you'll get a good house, you'll get lots of money, you have a healthy body, you have beautiful, obedient, healthy children, and you'll be healthy, happy, and holy, and all these things. Only by worshipping the Vaishnavas. Guru Puja, Vaishnav Puja, Brahman Puja, Namo Brahmani Devaya, Go Brahmani Yataya Cha, Jagadataya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Nama. The cows and the Brahmins, they exist in this world for the hita, the benefit of the world. And so Krishna has sent them to the world. Krishna has created the Brahmanas from his mouth. And he has sent them to this world to speak and to teach and to guide and to benefit everyone, because knowledge is what's required. The more knowledge one has, the more benefit one experiences. Although samskaras, there is some provision for samskaras, observing samskaras among Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they must follow the guideline of Satkriya Saradipika. As Gopal Bhatta Goswami has written, this is how you do it. And it's quite a simplified version of the samskaras, the minimal observance. But the emphasis on his presentation there is Krishna first, then the demigods. But in the materialistic samskaras, oftentimes there's no Vishnu, there's no Krishna other than Yajna Vai Vishnu. Yajna Purush Vishnu is represented in the fire, in the Homa, or Home that they do. But, for example, in this Shraddh, Sanskara or Pinda Shraddha, whatever they call it, to the Sanskara worship in the ancestors, the Karmakandiya practice, you have to have a Homa, fire yajna, and all the rituals that go with that, which is quite elaborate. But in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Pind, there's no Homa. That's a major difference. So the Karmakandiya Brahmins, the smartas, they call them smartas, because they're not very smart. Well, they may be smart, but they follow the smritis, the corollary shastras that are expanded from the shrutis. Smriti. One who follows the smriti is called a smarty. A smarta. And one who doesn't follow the smritis is called a wise guy. He follows the Pancharatrika Shastras and he follows Bhagavad. Follows Bhagavad Vidhi and Pancharatrika Vidhi. So one thing is to be a smart guy, to be a smarta, but it's better to be a wise guy. Because wisdom is better than smarts. Because you may be smart implies some material knowledge or expertise in a particular field of material knowledge, but wise implies a spiritual touch. Wisdom generally has the implication of some godliness to it. So a wise guy, he understands the purpose of all Vedas and all yajnas. Second canto of Bhagavatam, Narayana Paramaka. It says Narayana Paramaka, Narayana Paraveda, Narayana Parayajna, Narayana Paratapa. There's two verses in succession that describe that Narayan, Vishnu, he is Paramaka. Maka means yajna, fire yajna. He is the supreme yajna. He is the supreme austerity. He is the supreme knowledge. Narayana para vidya, Narayana para tapa, Narayana paramaka. He is the supreme and most important personality. So therefore, Bhagavatam establishes that. And being Bhagavatas, we are the Bhagavad Gan, or the group of Bhagavatas who follow the Bhagavad Vidhi, which is supported by Pancharatrika Vidhi, which is the puja system that's centered on Krishna, Krishna's satisfaction, Krishna Santosh. And we follow the Acharyas and Mahajans like Narada Muni and others who are giving the Narada Pancharatra and other Pancharatrika literatures, which guide us in the pure worship of Krishna. So this is important because, especially in India, in the West, we don't have to worry too much about demigod worshiping. Sometimes you worship rock stars, but we never think they're greater than God. Well, they're pretty good. They're close, but they're not greater than God. There's not much competition between Mick Jagger and Lord Narayan. But the Indians have a big problem with devata puja and demigod worship. They're really perplexed about it. and nervous. They're nervous about it, perplexed about it, and frightened about it. They're actually afraid to give up the habit. They're addicted. And even when they turn their face towards Krishna, they only turn half their face. And one face is still looking at Shiva and Durga, and they maintain attachment to Panchopasana and various other forms of karmakandiya. So all the demigods are actually, since all the demigods are loyal servants of Krishna, they'll be happy to receive his remnants. So the point is, because the demigods, if you are, you're a devotee, are you a devotee? At least we think we're devotees. Are you happy if someone gives you Mahaprasadam? Very happy. That's the right answer. Everyone else is like, yeah, well, yeah, I guess, you know, gee. But then, you know, Prabhupada's disciple has a little bit of more appreciation. Very happy. If someone gives us Mahaprasadam, we say, Mahaprasadam ki jai. If someone brings us Jagannath Mahaprasadam from 2,000 kilometers away in Puri in the middle of the winter and it's freezing cold and you're in the blues and you don't feel good and everything looks bleak and dark and gloomy. The winters are like that. And then somebody says, hey, Maharaj, I bought some Jagannath Mahaprasada. Oh, you dance for joy. You just become so happy. You jump up and down. In Bhakti Sananda Saraswati, when someone would come from Puri to Calcutta, and when he was in Bagh Bazar, and they would bring Jagannath Mahaprasadam, he immediately jump out of his seat like Jagannath Das Babaji jumping out of his basket when he discovered the Yogapit, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. When he went there with Bhakti Vinod, the 140-year-old Jagannath Das Babaji jumped out of his basket and danced around in ulas. So Bhakti Santa Saraswati, when some brahmachari would bring Mahaprasadam from Puri, Jagannath Puri, he would jump out, whatever he was doing, he dropped it and jump up out of his seat and he would dance around, Jai Jagannath, Jai Jagannath, because he's born. He's born 100 meters from the temple. Have you ever been to his house? It's a Gaudiya Math temple, right on the temple road. That's his birthplace, right? 1874, February 6th. We're also born the same day, but different year. So he, a few years difference, not much. So he's born in the shadow. He's born in the jyoti of Jagannath. And Jagannath stopped to have his darshan. This is the thing, that the Lord is interested in darshan of his devotees. Even baby Bhakti Siddhanta, or rather, baby Bimal. Baby Bimal, Bimal Prasad Dutt. Then Jagannath was driving on his Rath cart. And when he was on his Rath cart, he was looking at his mobile. On his mobile, he pressed the address book and he said, hey, wait a minute. Bimal Gupta, Bimal Prasad. Oh, 101 Temple Road. Hey, wait a minute. 98, 99. 101. Hey, this is 101. Hey, stop. This is 101 Temple Grand Road, Temple Road. And Bhima Prasad lives here. Stop the cart. I want to have darshan. Because when you see in the first canto, it's a very interesting point. When Krishna is trying to leave, which he came to Hastinapur to be with Kunti and the Pandavas so many times in Draupadi. And he went, came and went. Sometimes he stayed for 2 months, 3 months. Can you imagine a house guest staying for 3 months? And nowadays, if a house guest stays 3 hours, you're ready to hit him on the head with a frying pan. But 5,000 years ago, the consciousness was different. Even some of you, if any of you came from a village in India, which probably nobody here has, but in the villages, up until 40, 50 years ago, 30 years ago, of course, even if you did, you wouldn't be born, but 40, 50 years ago in the villages, if some relative came from another part of India, or not even very far away, and they came to visit for a Sunday, then there was so much Prem Bhav, either artificial or genuine, but anyway, they were showing it, that when that relative, Chacha, Mama, Masi, Jiju, or whomever, when they wanted to go back to their place, yeah, and then everybody in the family, especially the immediate relative, it was his brother or whatever, and then the nephews, they would say, oh, please stay another day, don't go, please, and it would be genuine, they'd have tears in their eyes. And we're all from Mlecha land. most of us, white-faced Wallahs. We're from Lecha land, where people like don't want, they lock the door inside and outside so no one comes and visits them. They don't want anyone there. The last person they want to see is a relative. As long as they're not a relative, they look out and say, oh, it's a relative, I'm not here. Nobody knows if you're there or not because the doors don't have any latches and all that stuff. It's just, you can be there or not there because it's locked, invisibly locked. So, shh, be quiet. My uncle's there. Shh, turn off the TV. Just wait 10 minutes. Don't. Hey. Then he goes. But in India, people have some type of feelings. They have some type of heart, at least, in this last vestige of Vedic culture, which is about a thread left here. So they would all cry in the house, and then the person insisted, no, I have to go. I've been here for 2 days already, my business, my job, my kids are crying. So he would start to walk out, and he would walk out to the gate, and the whole family would come behind him. He said, I'm going. Then he would start, because those days there was no cars, you had to walk somewhere to the train station or walk somewhere to the Tanga, or just walk. It was a couple hundred years ago, you just walked off to your 50 miles or wherever you came from. So then they would all follow, the whole house would follow, and they're all crying, please, please, they would get in front of him, please. And so they're soft-hearted, and he's also soft-hearted. He said, okay. And then he would, right in the middle of the road, 100 meters away from the house, he would turn around, and he'd have his bag and say, okay, and he'd come back and stay another week. This was Indian culture. It's a fact. I've met people from the villages. They tell me like this. That's the only reason I can tell you. I have no experience of that. So now, back to the first canto in Queen Kunti and Draupadi in Hastinapur. When Krishna would come there, and then at this time he was there during the Kurukshetra War, as everyone knows, and he was hired as a driver there. He had a half a month engagement. 18 months he was doing chauffeur work for Arjuna. He was driving his chariot. So then they gave him a little place to stay and a little food also, because chauffeurs you have to take care of. And he's also their dear friend. So then, after being about a month or two already, before the war and after the war, then he decided, now I really have to go because I also have a wife. I have at least, not only one wife, I have 16,000 wives. And I can hear them crying from here. They're crying in Dwarka. I can hear them in Hastinapur, because if 16,000 ladies get together and cry, you can hear that for a million miles. Now, what to speak of the 1,60,000 babies? Imagine if 1,60,000 babies cry at the same time. It'll break a hole in the ozone layer. So Krishna's feeling the weight of all this love from that side. But then he's feeling the weight of all the love from this side, from Draupadi. And so, actually, it's a very detailed thing Vishnu's telling the purports there. Because, of course, what's going on here after the battle is that Bhishma is also lying on a bed of arrows. And he's meditating on Krishna. This is a very interesting point. That's why I want to share it, because it's related to this point. He's meditating on Krishna while he's lying in the bed of arrows, and he's thinking, day and night he's just thinking, and he's been abandoned there, he's just lying in the bed of arrows, and he's thinking, I really like to see Krishna. So while Bhishma Dev is meditating on Krishna, Krishna's in the palace, he's also meditating on his devotee, he's meditating on Bhishma. So therefore he creates, but he doesn't want to tell the Pandavas directly that I have to stay. I have to stay. But he creates in Yudhisthira and Draupadi and this intense feelings that he must stay. So they keep saying, you have to stay. And then, so because if he says he wants to stay, then people will think, he's already been there for so long. So the point I'm making is that we devotees, we try to meditate on Krishna, rather than Krishna. That's called Rup Dhyan, meditate on Krishna's form. Meditate on the glories of his holy name. Meditate on his pastimes, his form. Meditate on his devotees. Meditate on his, it's called remembrance, or dhyan, or smaran. So this is one of the practices of Vaishnavas. especially in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, it's a very big part of our bhajan. And at some point in our development, it become the primary activity of our seva to Krishna, bhajan. But what Vishwanath is telling here that some people, commentators, they say that Bhishma was lying in the bed of arrows waiting for Uttarayana. The sun moves in two different positions, Uttarayana and Dakshinarayana. So Dakshin means south and Uttara means north. So on January 14th, the sun, it's called Sankranti, the sun moves into Uttarayana. It starts to move towards the northern hemisphere, towards the north pole. If you're living in a village, you see the sun is rising like here and going like this. That's Dakshinarayan, and that's because that's the south. Then on January 14th, it starts moving. The sun is moving. You see it every day. It's rising here for 6 months. Then it starts moving here, rising here, and pretty soon it's coming over, rising behind from the Dharmashala. The sun has actually changed its point of rising because it's moving north. Because every day we see the sunrise. And then that goes from January 14th until June 14th. Then June 14th it starts going do. And as it moves further south, it gets cooler and cooler and cooler. Because it's further away. The angle of the rays is further from this part of the world. So people say, oh, he lied on the bed of arrows because he benedicted by his father Santanu that he could die at will. So he was waiting for Uttarayan, because in the Gita it says there's two pathways to leave this world. One is the path of light and one is the path of darkness. The path of darkness is Dakshinarayan. If you die during that time, then you go to hell. I say like that. It's not auspicious, it's inauspicious. And if you die during Uttarayan, then you get liberated. You go to Svarga, Bhur, Bhuvaswa, Tapa, whatever, wherever you go. So this is in the Shastras, it said that this is a good time to die. Good people, fortunate people, they die then. But we see that transcendentalists, they don't really care. They leave in Kartik. You see in the calendar, for the Radhakund calendar, so many Vaishnavas leave their body during Dakshinarayan. Great Siddha Mahatmas, especially in Kartik. Kartik is Dakshinarayan. So they're not affected. They don't care. It doesn't matter to them because they're in pure Krishna consciousness. So Vishwanath was saying, no, this word Uttarayan doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that at all. He wasn't waiting for that at all. It's very, very interesting. He says, Uttara means the mother of Parikshit. You've heard of Parikshit, right? His mother's name is Uttara. And the father is whom? Who is the father of Parikshit? Abhimanyu. And Ayana means shelter of, like Narayan, the shelter of the Naras, Ayana, the shelter of living entities. So when it says he was waiting for Uttarayan, he was waiting for the shelter of Uttara, because Krishna entered the womb of Uttara to protect her from Ashwatthama's Brahmastra, or rather protect her and also protect Parikshit. So he was waiting for Uttarayan. This is beautiful, Vishnu Chakravarti. So the smartest or the other commentators on Bhagavatam, they'll see this is Uttarayan means this. But those that have Ras Vichar and have Premanjana, then they see everything related to Krishna. Because the Bhagavatam is all about Krishna. The Mahabharata is all about Krishna. He is the star there. So we have to trace out Krishna and everything, not Karmakanda, or not some vidhi, yama or niyama, about, oh yes, you should die in Uttarayan. And because everyone else died, everyone else in the battle of Kurukshetra, they died during Dakshinarayan. Right? Because it was before January 14th. So then he waited till after January 14th. So they said, see, he waited in Uttarayan. So what's that called? That's called Adi Bhautika Vichara. Remember, we discussed the Bhagavatam verses. There's three levels: Adi Bhautika Vichara, Adi Atmika, and Adi Daivika. The external level is the Bhautik, the Buddha. Oh, it says waiting Uttarayana. Well, Uttarayana just means like this. But is there a higher? What is it? Is there a deeper meaning? What is the personal meaning to the Bhav of Bhishma? What's on his mind? What is his Atma? What is his Bhav? And what is a daivik? What is a Krishna consideration? Daivik means transcendental, or the Krishna consideration. So the point I wanted to make about all this is that, he was waiting for Krishna to come. And what Vishwanath brings out, which a lot of devotees maybe never think about too much, we're always meditating on Krishna, or trying to, rather than Krishna. But Krishna also meditates on his devotees. And this is one of the most significant points about this story of Bhishma, the departure of Bhishma, in terms of bhakti bhajan. That we it's not one-sided, because love is never one-sided. Well, I'm thinking of Krishna, I'm meditating on Krishna. Was he meditating on me? He's thinking of me. Yes, it's described. He was meditating on Bhishma. He was just thinking how to make an arrangement so I can go see him, because he wants my darshan. So Uttarayan, he was waiting to see the shelter of Uttara. So this is so we know that Krishna is the supreme, right? Although devotees know that Krishna is the supreme absolute truth, the cause of all causes, and the source of the demigod's power, nevertheless, the devotees should never criticize the demigods or scriptures that support demigod worship. When one sees a murti of a demigod, he should offer respect, seeing that demigod as a Vaishnava. Why do some scriptures establish a particular demigod as the supreme? Shiva Puran says that Shiva is supreme, and it describes so many pastimes how Bhagavan has to worship Shiva. So, Bhagavan, who is Bhagavan? Bhagavan is supposed to be the supreme. Bhagavan Ram, Bhagavan Vishnu, Bhagavan Krishna. But so there's so many anecdotes in there, you could say, anecdotes or stories, how Shiva is being worshipped by Ram and other forms of Bhagavan. So therefore, higher than Bhagavan is Shiva. Shiva is supreme. And these are all the stories. But if you read Bhagavad Puran, you find Shiva is worshipping Krishna. Because Vrikasura was given a benediction by Shiva to crack anyone's head in half. And then immediately thought, well, let me try cracking Shiva's head. Biting the hand that feeds you. So then he ran after Shiva to crack his head. Shiva said, oh my God, got myself in a heap of trouble. I'm in hot water now. So then who did Shiva go to when he was in distress? Somehow he felt powerless or incapable of dealing with this monster that he had created, Vrikasura. So then he said, he started praying to Krishna. Oh, Krishna, help me. So then you know, the pastime. Krishna took the form of a little boy. Very cute and attractive little boy. And he intercepted that demon on the path and said, hey, where are you going so fast? Where are you running so fast? Oh, little boy, what are you doing in the middle of the forest? You're such a cute little boy, attractive little boy. Where do you come from? Oh, I'm just out picking some flowers for puja. What are you doing? Well, I'm chasing after Lord Shiva to crack his head. Crack his head? How can you crack Lord Shiva's head? Oh, I did puja to Lord Shiva, and I did austerities to please Lord Shiva. Then he gave me a benediction, a boon. He gave me some ashavad, a blessing. Because I asked him, I said, can you give me the power to crack heads? In other words, he wanted to be a temple president. Can you give me the power to crack heads? And so Shiva said, sure, I'm easily pleased. Take it, have it. It's all yours. Ha! Now I will crack your head. So I'm going to crack Shiva's head. And because if I crack Shiva's head, then I will be supreme. And everyone will have to worship me. And Krishna had a smile on his face. And he said, this little boy, you really believe that? You believe that Shiva would give such a benediction as that? He's not so stupid. Besides, I don't believe it. Who can give that power? That's a tremendous power. Who can have such a power? And in different ways, Krishna was speaking to him in a very sweet voice and the high-pitched voice of a child. And of course, Vrikasura, he also has his family and So he has some samskaras for attachment to children. And he was looking, listening, he said, yes. And after a while, he became a little bit swayed over in his mind, and his a little bit changed in his attitude. And then the little boy said, listen, I tell you what, it's only reasonable that you should, before you crack Shiva's head, you should test it. You should test the power to see, to make sure, you know, make sure it works before you apply it to Lord Shiva. And somehow, because he's like expert Sankirtan devotee, like all Sankirtan devotees, he bewildered the guy. That's what happens in Sankirtan. You speak different mantras and the guy gets bewildered and he gives you $100. And then 5-10 minutes later, when he sits down in the seat waiting in the lounge where you go right before you board the airplane there, or waiting room or whatever they call it, then he sits down, he kind of collects his thoughts, the passion has settled down a little bit, and he's a little bit patient. He looks to his side, what is this book I got anyway? Srimad Bhagavatam. 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 What the hell? And he opens it up. My God, what kind of language is this? It's all weird squiggly lines and it's not even, can't even read it. What is it, some kind of hieroglyphics or something? You know, the Sanskrit. And he thinks, what? How did I get this book? He doesn't even know what happened. He got the whammy on him. He's in Yoga Maya. Oh yeah, I met some guy. Oh my God, hey, that guy took $100. And then, but he can't go back out to see him because there's security. There's heavy. Once you get through security, you can't go back out when you're waiting to get on the plane. That guy was Hare Krishna. So anyway, it was going on like that. So in a similar way, this art of sleight of hand, or this art of bewildering people, began with Krishna. Bewildering Brikasura. This was the first Sankirtan engagement. So then Krishna Gopal said, listen, before you try it on Lord Shiva, I think you should test out the power on your own head. Touch your own head and see what happens. That's a brilliant idea. You can always count on a small child to give a good idea. I'll do it. I'll test it right now. Boink! As soon as he touched his head, it cracked in half. So there, Haribo. There's an example of Krishna saving Lord Shiva. So we will quote the Bhagavatam and so many stories of Krishna being supreme and all the demigods. Brahma worshipped him, Indra worshipped him, Shiva worshipped him. And so we feel very confident, very faithful that yes, our Lord Krishna is supreme. Then the Shaivites will say, well, wait a minute. And the Shiva Pran, then this one and that one. And you go, oh, gee whiz. Shiva's supreme. No, Vishnu's supreme. And that's what happens in South India. They go to war over it. They actually kill each other, and they have in the old days. Now they call them the police, I suppose. Throw tear gas or something. In the old days, the Shaivites and the Vaishnavas would fight to death over who is supreme. So these scriptures are telling that this such and such demigod is Bhagavan Shiva or Bhagavan Mahadeva, or he's the supreme, to facilitate the limited ability of a particular mentality to grasp the absolute truth. Such scriptures are actually trying to elevate their followers to the point of devotional faith in Krishna and bhakti. And Vrindavan Das Thakur says, besides pleasing everyone with this transcendental pastime, which was, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he visited so many temples of the demigods, especially Lord Shiva. Then he would dance if he saw a nice puja going on there, and that his devotee was being worshipped nicely. Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, that Shambhu Mahadev Shiva was being worshipped in a very attentive way, in a very clean and wonderful way. He would dance and have kirtan and be very happy with that pujari and with that puja in that particular Shiva temple. So by this pastime he taught, and then he's saying, Lord Chaitanya said this, no one should ever criticize or diminish the position of Krishna's energies manifested in the many demigods and goddesses, devas and devis. One strengthens his love and devotion to Krishna by showing proper love and reverence to the demigods. Now, it's more than just giving a nod of approval. Okay, Shiva, okay, great, cool. You know, Durga, you're all right. Nod your head. But he's saying that one strengthens, makes his bhakti, his priti, his praying for Krishna, becomes strong, becomes firm, becomes powerful by showing proper love and reverence to the demigods. Krishna is pleased when he is worshipped along with his energies and associates. That means, it can mean two things. It can mean worshipped along with the demigods, but what it really means for us is worshipped along with his associates, his parishads, Radha and Krishna and Balaram and all that. And his energies, which means his Ladini Shakti and Sandhya Shakti, his internal. You worship Krishna because we never worship Krishna alone. And one an additional point is that it says that if you chant Krishna, Krishna, then okay, Radha is pleased, Krishna is pleased also to hear his glories and to hear his chanting. But he's not as pleased as if we chant his name in connection with his devotee. So therefore, when we say, if we say Gauranga, that's the name of Lord Chaitanya, or we say Krishna, but then we say Yashoda Nandan, Yashomati Nandan. That Nandan means the son of Yashoda, that's Krishna, no one else. And we say Yashoda, that's his mother. So now you're worshipping Krishna along with his associates. You're worshipping Krishna along with his devotee, Yashoda. Or you say Kanta, lover, or you say Radha Kanta Namostate, that means the lover of Radha. It's Krishna's name. It's Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Radha Kanta, Radha Kanta, Kanta Kanta, Radha Radha. Right? You have a Maha Mantra like that. So the point is that in a similar way, when we worship Krishna along with Radha or his associates, and also on another level, if we worship the demigods, not that we worship them side by side or along with worshiping Krishna, but we can worship particular demigods, and that should be sanctioned. It's not that we whimsically say, well, I'm going to worship Ganesh and along with Krishna, so I have Ganesh on my altar. It should be sanctioned by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. There must be some precedent for our puja, for our worship. Yes, Sanatana Goswami worship Gopeshwar. Yes, Raghunath Das Goswami worship Gopeshwar. Yes, Vishnath Chakravarti Pad worship Gopeshwar. Yes, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur worship Gopeshwar. Yes, I should ask my Guru Maharaj, may I worship Gopeshwar? May I keep a linga on my altar or some to worship Gopeshwar, to pray to him, to bless me with, to free me from Purusha Abhiman, the enjoying mentality, the enjoying spirit, and fill me with Prakriti Bhav, Kinkari Bhav, and enable me and bless me that I can become a pure Kinkari, a pure maidservant of Srimati Radharani. O Gurudev, may I engage in this worship along with the worship of Gornitai or Radha Krishna? And then if Guru gives blessing, all puja goes through the mind, heart, and hand of Guru. All puja goes through the mind, heart, and hand of Guru. So we have to remember that. So therefore, that's what it's saying, that we could selective demigods. For example, some Gaudi Vaishnavas, they worship Katyayani. Katyayani Mahamaye. How's it go? Mahayogin Yadishvari Nandagopasutam Devi Patim me kurute namaha. Oh, great yogini, I pray to you that I can become, that the son of Nanda Maharaj can become my husband. So the kanyas were praying like that when they were bathing during Margashirsha month, during Katyayani Puja, for 1 month. So some Vaishnavas, they're in this bhav of wanting to be Krishna's kanta, or lover, or whatever. So they worship Katyayani, Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So this is, Prabhupada also says in some purports that we can worship demigods in relation to increase our bhakti, our devotion. Is there any questions or comments at this point? Yes.
What is the pastime of Krishna saving Uttara, that happened after Bhishma Pitama left?
No.
Because I thought when Krishna, the war was done and Krishna was about to go back to Dwarka, that's when Ashwatthama.
Now what happened, I don't know if you were there, but yesterday I was explaining about that, or the day before maybe, about how Ashwatthama killed what he thought was the five Pandavas, that was the night of the last day of the battle practically. Ashwatthama went into the camp of the Pandavas. Krishna secretly told the Pandavas they should move out to another camp. And their five sons were sleeping there, and he killed the five sons, and he brought the heads to Duryodhan. Duryodhan was really angry. So, and then, but the Uttara, Ashwatthama's thing with Uttara was before that. It was much before that. It was maybe during the battle, or I know that it was maybe during the battle, or something like that. It wasn't. As far as I understand, the sequence is that Ashwatthama threw the Brahmastra. The first Brahmastra that he threw, one Brahmastra that he threw was to kill Arjuna. One Brahmastra he threw was to kill the Parikshit. And then another Brahmastra he threw when he was fighting Arjuna. There's two of them. So that was all right around the few days following, either during the battle or the few days following the war. And Bhishma sat on the bed of arrows for several days, or a month, or I don't know how many days. So that was hearing Bhishma Parva. That was after that, Krishna went. Because he knew Bhishma Patamaha is one of the Mahajans. There's 13 Mahajans, and he's one of them. So that was after that, because you see the sequence. After they went to give darshan, he went to give darshan of Bhishma, then Bhishma spoke on Varnashram Dharma, he talked about Ashram Dharma and Pati Dharma, many things he spoke there in Mahabharata, and some things are in Bhagavatam. Then Krishna went. There's no more Vriksha at all. All this was already happened.
If all the gopis worship Katyayani or not.
Excuse me?
If all the gopis worship Katyayani or
not. All the gopis worship Katyayani or Dhammisam.
The Dandakaranya sages who saw Ram in Treta Yuga, they developed conjugal feelings. Because as we mentioned when we were discussing Yugal Gita, chapter 35, this is possible because Krishna's attraction is so supreme that even men are attracted to Krishna. We read that the siddhas flying in their airplanes over the rasa dance or over Vrindavan, when they see Krishna, and they heard, actually it doesn't even say see, when their wives heard the sound of Krishna's flute, their dresses, their nivibandhan, their knots in their underwear became loose, and their dresses became loose, and they started to feel embarrassed. And Vishnu Chakravarti explains their husbands also started to feel embarrassed because they were thinking, oh my God, we're losing our manhood. And their underwear, the knots of their underwear was also coming undone. Their clothes was getting loose. Their clothes were becoming loose and they were thinking, oh, this flute is so attractive. And they were and just by hearing the flute, by contacting Krishna's flute, they immediately developed Prakriti Bhav. They wanted to offer themselves for the pleasure of Krishna. And they said, but we have to become women. And they became very embarrassed, thinking, oh my God, how are we going to pull this off? And we have to change our sex and drop down on the earth and offer our bodies to Krishna because he's enticing us and enchanting us so much with his flute, just his flute, what to speak of the beauty behind the flute. So this example, which we discussed, remember? Or whoever was awake. I wasn't awake myself, but I was speaking. It shows how what to speak of inanimate objects, rivers flow backwards, rocks melt, and lakes turn solid. Even men want to become women. Shiva wanted to become a woman. He became a gopi, Gopishvara. Narada wanted to become a woman. He became Naradi Gopi. Arjun, the holder of the Gandiva, Arjun, became a Sakhi in Padma Puran, Arjuniya Sakhi. He said, Krishna, can you turn me into a Sakhi? so I can see your rasa dance. I want to be your girlfriend. I'm your boyfriend, but I want to be your girlfriend. Okay, boing. And he became Arjuna Sakhi. You can read in Padma Puran. So, the greatest heroes, the greatest demigods, all the macho people of the universe, if they contact Krishna, they want to become girls. Want to become sakis. So these Dandakaranya sages, when they saw Sita and Ram, they said, oh, so Ram. and their desire was, we want to offer our bodies to you as your wives. So they took birth from the womb of gopis in Boma Vrindavan, and then they did the usual puja that virgin girls do to get someone as their husband. Katyayani Mahamaye Mahayogan Yadishvari Nandagopa Sutam Devi Patime Kurute Namah.